Hello everybody. So this morning I'm recording a little bit of bonus content for you for our theme of self-healing in the Soul Sanctuary. And I'm here with one of my oldest friends, Nikki Wyatt, who is known as the Karma Coach, and her website is spiritoftransformation.com. Nikki, welcome to Morning Cup of Tea and Chat with the Soul Sanctuary.
I'm so delighted to be here.
Oh, and I'm glad you're physically here. We're sitting next to each other with matching cups of tea. So Nikki and I have known each other for a very long time, and we first met when we were both working for a holistic events and publishing company in London. And over the last almost 20 years, because we don't live near each other, Nikki lives near Brighton, so we tend to keep in touch by phone, and we have these lovely, rich, deep conversations, mostly about healing. So we thought this was the perfect opportunity while Nikki's visiting that we could record something that may also be of interest to you and perhaps resonate with what you're discovering yourself about healing, and maybe give you some new insights and illuminate some of the questions that you might have about healing this month. So we're going to dive in and just have a chat, and really quite informal, just chatting as we do about healing. And Nikki, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the kind of work that you do, just to set the scene a little bit so that people know a bit about your background and the sort of healing you do, because I know that we both work with essences, but they don't, and also our, you know, I think probably our interest areas are maybe complementary but a little bit different. So if you could just introduce a little bit about the work that you do and the kind of the themes that you're most excited about.
Well, thank you. I have probably been most interested, as I began to work with essences and with the same Gaia healing energy that you have, Jackie, by ancestral healing and how that flows down through families and generations and how that can show up in our lives now. So I have spent many years looking at karmic patterns and the way patterns repeat through families, and how we can, how sort of uprooting those patterns at a deep level in your own life can actually not just heal yourself, but actually bring a great deal more flow and relaxation into your whole family line. I have seen quite amazing things happen when people do that. And as part of that, I've created a karmic essence range and a transformation essence range, which includes most of the important themes that I've seen with working with clients. And I've also got very interested in family constellation work and now organisational constellation work as well, because that seems to be extremely helpful in helping to understand soul pathways and the way that we can sometimes not, it helps to see the links which may not be obvious on a day-to-day level, because when you're working with constellation energy, you're looking at things much more from a solar energy point of view, and the links become much more obvious. In many ways, I think you see the geography of the heart when you set up constellations, and I often, when I'm talking to clients, sometimes they sort of form in my head as we're speaking, and I can see where the links are coming from.
Very exciting. So for people that are new to constellations and don't know what constellation work entails, could you give a little overview about what happens essentially in a constellation and how that brings about healing, how the energy shifts, just kind of what the format of that sort of setting is, just so that people can get an idea of how constellations work. And then we can maybe talk a little bit about how you can work with that yourself in different ways.
Well, usually what happens with a constellation, if you're working in a group, which you can work one-to-one, but groups are more common, you will usually have one person who can feel the energy beginning to rise within them of wanting to do the work that they've come to do. And that person will then sit down next to the facilitator and talk through. The facilitator will hopefully ask them some quite key questions. What is the issue will be the first thing. What do they want to look at in the constellation? And then they'll ask them some key questions about their family background, usually, that might give them a clue as to what could be behind the issue. It could be something something like it can be a massive range of things. For example, I've seen people do constellations around why they can't give up smoking, or why they're having a problem losing weight, or it could be something about why they can't seem to hold on to money or find the kind of relationship they want, or why they're having a problem owning their own power. It could be many, many different things that we look at. And it sometimes isn't necessary to go back right through the family. Sometimes it's enough just to choose somebody, because that's what then happens next. The facilitator asks you, if it's your issue, to go and choose people in the circle, to one person to represent yourself and somebody else to represent another element in the story that you're bringing. And that might be, if you were trying to give up smoking, they might ask somebody to represent cigarettes, for example, or they then might say, can you bring someone in to represent your father or your mother, or the issue that you're bringing? Even it could be as conceptual as that, and then the person whose issue it is brings these people into the centre of the circle, and what's called sets them up, which means you stand behind each person and you just feel intuitively where they need to be standing in relation to each other. And then when you've done that, you go and sit back down again, and the people in the centre of the circle begin to tune in without... It's not an intentional thing, it's not a conscious thing. It just happens that they begin to feel feelings. They may be emotions, they may be a change in physical temperature, or they may feel a sudden need to lie down or sit down or move away from each other. They may have strong emotions about other people in the setup. They may suddenly think they really don't like this person standing next to them. They're all clues as to how the energy is moving and what the relationship is between those elements in the constellation. And from there, things will develop quite naturally, and all sorts of information comes to light. That's why it's also an extremely useful way to work with family secrets. Because if you don't know, if there's something that you kind of know you don't know about your family, but you know there's something, there must be something, because you're manifesting something in your life, and you just think, well, this doesn't make any sense to me. It's not logical. It's not rational. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why I'm acting like this. If somebody who's acting like this ought to have this kind of an experience in their background, but I don't have it. So why am I feeling like this? That's a classic symptom of, this is probably something you've decided to carry for an ancestor. And if you set it into a constellation context, often the secret will be revealed, because the person representing the problem will suddenly be aware of what the problem is, what the secret is, what it is that hasn't been resolved, because it's always unresolved. Mm-hmm. That's the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to describe a constellation, because there's a certain magic moment, and a lot of people who come along for the first time and are asked to represent something for somebody panic, because they think they'll never be able to feel anything. But actually, it works with... I've never ever, and I've been doing it for many, many years and taking clients to them, and it's never not worked.
Yeah, because once you're in that field, it's like that field of healing, everything flows. And I've done two, and I remember one where I was representing somebody in somebody's family, and I started feeling labour pains, like I was going into labour. And this whole story unfolded about, it was like a birth, an unmarried mother who was pregnant, but I could physically feel in my body. And it's really interesting, the power of that.
The morphic field, I mean, you can't not believe in the intelligence of the field. Mm. If you do even just one constellation, you absolutely go, okay, there is a field of intelligence.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to do anything big to plug into it. That's what's amazing. Exactly. You just need that group intention to heal.
Yep. And I think what's really interesting about ancestral work is that idea, which you've expressed very clearly in something you wrote, I think it was a blog post or an article, about how we have the individual soul, but we also have the family soul. So we have our individual healing that we're to do, but we've also chosen the family that we've born into, because we will be getting in touch with issues that are the issues that we need to heal within ourselves, but that we need to illuminate, that are often family issues, and they have that imprint on us that we're working with.
I mean, I have seen people who have come and healed something for themselves in a constellation. They've released something that was blocked in the family line, and they've gone home later that day and something that, for example, was never allowed to be spoken of in their family, literally they've walked through the front door and it's the first thing somebody's come up and spoken to them about. And for their entire lives, that was a taboo subject.
Yeah.
Just extraordinary things like that.
And it's been given that space to be integrated and to be included into the family instead of being shut out and excluded.
Yes, I mean, there are some very key themes that we tend to look at when we're doing ancestral healing, and one of them is exclusion.
So how might that kind of theme of exclusion show up in somebody's life? Because I know it's certainly a pattern that I've carried, feeling, you know, separate and different and that I don't fit in and that I'm kind of excluded from normal social interactions, and it's very much the water violet pattern from Flower Remedies.
Mm.
So it's not something I've consciously looked at in a constellation, but wondering if you've sort of seen examples of people that carry that same pattern about feeling separate or excluded or different in some way, that's then there's been like a clear link to maybe something down the line that they've gone in touch with. Or maybe it hasn't shown up quite as obviously as that.
No, it can do. I think there are two ways that this happens that we need to be aware of if we're feeling like that and we don't have a sense of belonging. And I think one part is that we need to look within ourselves at which part of ourselves we might have excluded as not acceptable.
Mm.
So I think there is a self-healing and a self-integration process that needs to happen, where we need to do some self-inquiry and perhaps some journaling and looking at our different aspects of ourselves, something like Julia Cameron's book, for example, which... the name of which escapes
me. The Artist's Way.
Thank you. It's very good at helping us identify different voices within ourselves. Or Debbie Ford's book...
Dark Side of the Light Chasers,
exactly. Where you get all your different characters getting on a bus and you talk to them all and you identify all those voices. And if you've excluded any of those voices within yourself, then you will not feel like you belong, because there's only some of you that you're accepting and only some of you that you're bringing to any event or any group of people. If you leave half of you at the door or you push half of you behind you and hope no one notices, you will not feel like you belong.
That's interesting.
That's one aspect, which I think is entirely personal, entirely about now, entirely yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there is also a link to ancestral exclusion. And it may be that the part of you you've excluded actually resonates with that ancestral exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
There's normally, when you start to look at the ancestral line, there's normally a fairly clear point when somebody was excluded, and it may be, as we all know, we were far less tolerant as a society as we go back, certainly within the British culture, of, for example, unmarried pregnancies, homosexuality, marrying outside your social class, religious dogma was much perhaps stronger, and we had more divide around that.
And things like mental illness and suicide and stuff like that would have just been abhorrent, wouldn't it?
So many people have examples in their families of perhaps a relative who was shut away in a mental asylum and no one was allowed to discuss that, or somebody was sent away to have an illegitimate child, and either the child was then excluded from family conversation and never acknowledged within the family, or the person themselves was just, you know, do not darken my door again.
Mm-hmm.
So both the person and their child were never allowed back into the family unit. And when we do something like that, it has repercussions, because you can't just cut off part of your... because it's almost like you have this energy field that is yours, where the energy flows, but you also have this larger energy field, which is your tribal energy field, if you like. And the energy has to flow through that. And I think that when energy doesn't flow, the way I sense it in people and in myself is like this sort of cyst. It's like a bubble within my energy field. So when I manage to unblock it, that sort of cyst empties and drains, and the energy is able to flow again.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel happens when we are able to go back into our ancestral line and acknowledge the person who was excluded,
mm-hmm.
and bring them back in and accept them, acknowledge them, respect them, honour them, perhaps even be able to speak about them within the family when we perhaps couldn't before. Certainly I've done work where I've put ancestors like that on my shrine at home and really brought them into my heart on a very conscious level every single day for a while until I feel they're really firmly anchored in my tribal energy field. And at that point, all sorts of things disappear for me in my current life that I had no idea were even linked to that. And I feel more whole, and I feel like, and more, and actually on a physical level, one of the things that I notice happens if I can do that, as soon as I can burst one of those blockages, is I get better energy levels.
Yeah.
Because I think the more you have those blocks, the lower your energy is, because you're carrying all this stuff, and you know what it's like if you're trying to go on holiday or something and you've got too many bags to carry. It's, you know, staggering around, you know, across the airport thinking, heavens above, why do I have all this stuff with me? And that's what it can feel like energetically. And you're just, you know, why even, it's hard to get out of bed when you've got that much. You're looking at all the stuff you're about to pick up and have to carry with you.
And there's so much in what you're saying. Like, I'm nodding and I'm kind of like stop. I need to absorb that. No, that's really exciting. We need to talk about that more. But okay. I love that idea about wholeness, because for me, that's what healing's about. It is about, like, exactly what you're saying about integrating all the parts of ourselves and welcoming every bit in, and welcoming in physical pain and welcoming in the bits we don't like and the bits we find hard to accept and the emotions, like, you know, the anger or the fear or the resentment or whatever we don't like. So I really love that idea that as well as our own wholeness and integration as an individual process, there is that greater integration of family wholeness, and that the idea of the tribal energy field, when we can make that healthy and hold that, then becomes an amazing source of power and support for us. And certainly for me, like, the more I've, like, you've encapsulated it in ways I hadn't really put together in my head, but the more I've integrated ancestral stuff, the stronger, like, I feel within myself, and the more supported and safe and, yeah, connected and present that I feel, because I have that support of the ancestors. And I really like the way you were talking about ways of bringing that in, like, that, you know, if we have a shrine that we can set up, like an ancestor shrine, or, you know, to honour them in that way, that's so powerful. And that's something that we can do without having to go to a constellation workshop.
Yeah.
And I absolutely would recommend constellation works to everybody, because they've been so powerful. I mean, it was you that suggested them to me, kind of nudging me and saying, I think it'd be helpful. And I'm like, nah, I don't think so, I haven't got family stuff. And then it was just like, this is really helpful. But setting up that shrine, that's a lovely idea of honouring the ancestors, because we would not be here without them. And if any of them is shut out, then it's bound to have an impact.
I mean, there is some, I can't remember who it is, but there is somebody who's sort of identified different pathways, and I actually now can't remember in which part of the body, it might be the brain or the heart, which you can trace back to different ancestors. So your grandmother, for example, would bring a particular pathway into your heart, and your grandfather another. So you can imagine, if you've excluded one of those, you've blocked off a flow that's actually really important for your wholeness.
So you've blocked a source of energy, but you've also got the energy is not flowing, so it's getting held up, like you're talking about the cyst, and it's like all that pressure builds up around it, and you know, we get really stuck.
And if you think about it, when you press a cyst, it creates pressure and it hurts sometimes. Mm-hmm. Not always, but sometimes. And that then, to me, that's almost a manifestation of a trigger point. You know, it's pointing out to you, ouch, this there's a lot behind here.
Yeah. This needs your attention.
Yeah.
Yep. So one of the things I think is really interesting, and I know that we're both excited about, is when we start looking at ancestral healing, we look at the healing that comes down the male line and down the female line, which is so relevant to all of us, because we all need to find ways to integrate our masculine and feminine energies. Is there anything that you want to talk about that? Anything that feels pertinent?
Yes, I mean, in a way, it mirrors what I've just said about both going within and also looking at your bigger tribal energy field. So I feel that within us, we each have male energy and we each have female energy. And it's tempting, I think, to stay in the side that's comfortable and do your healing. So a lot of us perhaps I know for myself, I've certainly spent a lot of time healing my feminine energy, and I can see where that was very wounded in my family. But I haven't spent perhaps quite as much time healing my masculine, and that's where I'm focusing at the moment. And I think so. I think that's an inner thing, but I also think it's reflected within your family, within your tribe, because you obviously there's going to be generations of masculine and feminine wounding that you need to look at. But also I think, and why I suppose this one is particularly pertinent for me at the moment, is because I feel it's such a huge planetary problem. So it goes way beyond even, you know, your personal or even your tribal field. It's the whole world at the moment.
Yeah.
Seems to be particularly expressing it particularly strongly. I mean, I'm not saying it's been an issue since the beginning of time, but I think certainly when I look at how the world is at the moment, we seem to be seeing so much more violence against women and wounded masculine that doesn't know how to be healthy. I think perhaps one of those why ancestral healing might be very important in this is, and also our own inner healing of these two aspects, is because we're often acting out the hurt from our own life and from our own generational line, and we're not able to find a healthy model to go towards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a twofold process, I think, of healing. And I think the more each of us individually can do that healing, the more we're going to help the planet generally.
Yeah, and it's like that idea about the cyst. I think on a planetary level, that pressure is building up and it's just at really the point where it's ready to burst. It's so polarised, isn't it?
Yes, I think even countries where, violence against women has been considered quite normal, it is suddenly becoming a little bit more out there. We're hearing about it more. People are protesting more. Countries are understanding that for other countries, it's not acceptable the way they are treating people and even animals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The way the animal welfare, I think, has become so much more out there as an issue now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a healing of the heart, and
because that's where the masculine feminine energy meets, isn't it? The
absolutely.
Heart is the great connector.
It's that inner marriage chamber, and I think one powerful ritual you can do is to take your masculine and feminine into your heart and enact an inner marriage. You know, I know many people who've done that and even wear a ring.
I've never even thought of that. That sounds wonderful.
No, I have a friend who wears a ring because, you know, to remind herself of that ceremony she's done. Of bringing them together and allowing them to forgive each other and find love and compassion for each other.
I really like that idea. Because when I've meditated and connected with my inner feminine and my inner feminine, you know, is really, you know, trusts her intuition, really in her power. My inner masculine is this henpecked husband who is not given a voice. And I've really struggled with a lot of using my male energy in a healthy way and doing things that I consider to be in the male domain. And then I look back through the family line and I look at how disrespected and disempowered the male ancestors have been, and the women have always worn the trousers.
I think there's an awful lot of wounded masculine and wounded feminine getting together and disrespecting each other, actually, in very, you know, often very passive aggressive ways.
Mm-hmm.
That perhaps, especially if you're a very sensitive person, you're totally aware of it, but it's all an undercurrent, it's all slightly under the radar, it's lots of sniping and withholding and withdrawing and that sort of thing. So you might be very aware of it, but it may be difficult for you to give it a voice because it's not overt.
Yeah.
And people aren't owning it.
So then if you're not owning it, how can you change it? How can you do things differently is the challenge, isn't it?
It is, and I think I sit in circles quite often, and I know that one thing that a lot of us are looking at the moment is how do we, especially if we are working in our own business or wanting to do some entrepreneurial work of our own, how do we, it's terribly important, that becomes the wounded masculine, if we have it, it becomes very apparent. Because you need a healthy masculine to be able to work well in, I think that's an area where it shows up very quickly. And one of the things that a lot of us are finding is that it becomes too effortful when we aren't in harmony with our masculine. We're trying to do the doing kind of yang stuff in our working life, and it's feeling perhaps very sacrificial or very hard, or it's hard for us to delegate, it's hard for us to accept support with it, or it brings up massive amounts of self-doubt. And what we're working with, certainly in some of the circles I sit in, is how do we make that much more effortless? And I think that what can happen, speaking from my own personal experience as well, is that I'll do the tuning in for my business, and I'll do the all the work I'm doing with clients is very yin and very female, and I'm very, very comfortable in that spot. And when I'm sitting and I'm channeling and tuning in and doing intuitive work, it all feels very easy and flowing. The moment I start to go into the more yang masculine side of things, it can start to feel quite overwhelming or difficult or sacrificial. And I think what I need to do myself, certainly, is to bring both those energies in and not divide them so absolutely.
Exactly.
Because if I could bring in more yin receptive energy into the doing, then I would allow, you know, the doing wouldn't be so hard, it wouldn't be so effortful, and it would be much more receptive, so I would be able to receive the universe's support in the doing side of things.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. You're saying not separating that out, because I think that's what we do. Like in medicine, you know, we separate out different parts of the body, and there's a cardio specialist or a back specialist, and we do that in our bodies and in our lives. And actually, I think the whole thing about healing is finding ways to integrate energies and let them flow together, and bringing those kind of nurturing, more surrendered qualities, that's one aspect of the feminine, into the doing space makes it feel so much more spacious and it flows. You know, if I'm trying to do stuff just from a head space, it's always just much more stressy than if I can connect in intuitively and allow that to flow into my work. And then when I start to see myself getting too active and busy, you know, just to allow that in. But then equally, not to get into that space of just doing all the inner connection and the intuitive flowing stuff and never taking action, because that's another way of getting stuck and losing impetus. And then the energy, you know, you might have energy and enthusiasm for something, but then you get so kind of wishy-washy that you end up not taking action and the power falls out of it. So it's that constant integration and alignment and, yeah, that keeping that constant focus, I think, within us on where those energies are, and just regularly checking in.
If you think of the yin-yang symbol,
It
is that in constant motion, isn't it? Where you have a little bit of yin within the yang and vice versa. And that symbol, you know, if you can imagine that as a flowing, moving symbol, it is constant.
Mm.
Or it should be. And as soon as we allow it to become static and we go, oh, right, I've finished my meditation now with the spirit of my business, and now I'm moving into my to-do list, and you don't take that energy with you, then it all gets quite blocked, and it feels like you're doing it all from your will. And, you know, we're not meant to work with our willpower in that way. It's meant to be only part of the equation.
Because that overusing will is a great way to burn out really quickly, isn't it?
It's a great way to get a wonderful migraine and get lots of body tension, and I often experience it as heat in the body. You know, often my head will get very hot if I'm using a lot of will.
So migraines is an interesting topic, because there's quite a few people in the Soul Sanctuary that tend to get migraines, and that was where my healing journey started, was trying to find a way to heal mine. And I think for you as well,
that used to be
something. So I wonder if there's anything, just on our theme of healing, if there's anything you want to share about migraines that might be relevant, interesting for people. What's your take on them? Do you still get them, or not so much, or not at all?
Very, very rarely. And if I do, they're ghosts of what I used to get. You know, when I did get them, when I probably started getting them in my teenage years, they were debilitating. I mean, really in bed, dark room, and all the whole works.
So what's changed for you? 'Cause
I think I would say one of the aspects of it is emotional, and the other is physical, and the physical side of it, certainly I've found helpful, is doing plenty of stretching, like yoga and Pilates and Qigong, Tai Chi, all those sort of things that allow you to stretch and become spacious. For me, it's about spaciousness. I contract when yeah. I'm tense. And for me, migraine is often a really severe contraction, and it's yeah. often begins at the back of the neck, and then the blood vessels contract, and then I believe the medical kind of way it goes forward is that there's this, suddenly they finally release, and there's this great rush of blood flow across the brain, and that's what we experience as migraine. So anything that keeps me spacious helps. Mm-hmm.
I love spaciousness.
Yes, so do I. Physical exercise. Also, I think the amount of toxins in my environment have played a large part. So that can be helped with diet. It can, you know, keeping that cleaner and without preservatives and more organic food. And the air we breathe. You know, I personally use air filters in my environment, so I have far less toxic burden as I'm breathing. I also use filtered water, and that was actually when my migraine stopped. I used a very specific water called Pymag water, and that was my migraine really stopped within a few days of drinking that, and I was rather amazed. So I think there is that, because I think apart from the release of the toxic burden I was getting from drinking tap water, which I can reproduce if I go away as I am now, and if I'd continued to drink tap water the entire time I was away, I know I'd have a migraine by now. But I've kept my little water system with me, and I've kept drinking that water. The other aspect of that is that it hydrates you, and of course hydration is another, if you like, it's another expression of spaciousness. You know, our cells are allowed, when they're hydrated, to be as big as they need to be.
They're all plump.
Exactly, they're all plump. And that allows flow, quite literally flow. And water is how our cells communicate with each other. So the information goes around our body much more easily. Mm. And we literally are communicating through our field much with greater ease when we're hydrated. So I think, you know, hydration is extremely important. Also, just checking on our blood sugar levels. I know that it could be a trigger for me if I leave too long between eating. It doesn't have to be a major meal, but just keeping with me, you know, a little bit of apple or something, you know, a few nuts, something healthy that I can just make sure my blood sugar level never dips below a certain point can be very helpful, because it's just quite stressful on the body to go a long time without eating. But I think on the emotional level, migraine often comes through patterns of the one I see most often is perfectionism, yeah. and also frustration. And I think the frustration can come mainly from a couple of sources, I would say. I mean, one can be sexual frustration. I know Louise Hay connects migraine with that. And also expression, self-expression. If we clamp down on our self-expression, then that really makes us clench our jaws, because we're literally kind of biting our tongues. And when we do that, the back of our neck gets very tense, and hence, you know, you get that physical manifestation of migraine. So I would look, if I was getting constant migraine, what am I not expressing? Why? When do I clamp down? When do I clench my jaw? Because I'm angry? Because I'm frustrated? Because I'm not saying something I need to say? I think those are really common things. And I would say I've done quite a lot of work around being able to be much more myself and say what I really feel to people, and check on my circle of people. You know, I would say that's also very helpful. Look around you. Who are you with on a regular basis? Who you often find you think, I really want to say this to them and I can't, or, you know, I'd like to be able to express this, but I can't when they're around. And if you've got somebody who's quite consistently in your energy field like that, and you might even notice you start to get migraine more often when you're around them. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I'm afraid I would start culling my address book a little bit.
Yeah, because it's like that, the energy of your authentic self being expressed is not being allowed to express itself in that dynamic. So therefore, something needs to change. You need to find a way to be able to express yourself safely with that person, or maybe that relationship has served its purpose and needs to be culled.
Exactly.
Yeah, really interesting. And I certainly really resonate with the perfectionism, because that was pivotal for me when I started taking flower remedies, was getting in touch with vervain, which is that the perfectionism pattern, and never resting and constantly overdoing. And then when I got in touch with what was under the surface, underneath that, needing to be perfect and successful and busy and doing in the world and driving from will, underneath that was this really vulnerable, I'm just not good enough. That real painful self-worth stuff that I think we all are here to heal and get in touch with, which is such a fundamental part of the healing journey, isn't it? Just bringing our awareness to to that not good enough stuff that we all have. Have you met anybody in a client session who hasn't been carrying some version of that? Because I haven't in 16, no. 17 years of working with clients.
No, absolutely not. It all comes down both to self-worth and self-love, which are the, you know, kind of twins, really. That if you, I'm not enough, you can put any adjective you like before enough, and it will apply to anybody. I'm not thin enough, I'm not fit enough, I'm not tall enough, I'm not young enough, I'm not rich enough. We've all got it going on. And if you think any of those thoughts, you'll contract.
Yeah.
As soon as you, just thinking the thought, I'm enough.
Yeah.
It's relaxing.
Isn't it? Doesn't everything just, to just say, I am enough. I just feel like, relief. My whole body's just doing this big sigh, just sitting with that. I am enough.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that brings in the spaciousness that is the salve to the contraction that comes with the fear that you're not enough.
And actually, the space for and the flow for what we might consider magic or miracle energy or just the universe showing up in the most extraordinary ways, that's when it's able to flow in us. Mm. And the more space we can create in our bodies, in our fields, in our lives, the more space there is for that to show up. And the more we contract, the less that is able to manifest. And it becomes a vicious circle, because the more we sit and get tense and anxious that this isn't happening and this isn't going to happen, and we think about the future and catastrophize, the tighter everything becomes. Muscles, fascia in the body, our energy field, and there's no way in for that, for that to change, because the universe might be desperately trying to give you what you need, but there isn't a way in for that. It's when you sit in, you know, meditation, as we've done this morning, that does allow the universe to speak to you. It allows inspiration to arise within you. You might experience that as having, you know, a wonderful idea or a bit of a brainwave, and to me that's the universe speaking to you. And it often happens to me when I'm in meditation.
Yeah, because it's allowing an environment of spaciousness for that divine connection to be felt, to be experienced. And there's something, just as you were talking, it made me think that a lot of people who are on a spiritual journey, some sort of process of inner growth, when they meet something in their lives that they feel is really difficult and can't heal, that can often be a real source of self-punishment and thinking, oh, I should be able to heal this. I should have got the handle on this by now. And then I think it's very common human nature that we start beating ourselves up and saying, oh, you know, I should be better. And that then becomes something that causes more damage rather than just accepting ourselves where we are. You know, I've got a migraine again. Here I am now. How can I just love what's here rather than thinking, oh, you know, I should know better and I should, you know, all that kind of stuff, which is so toxic and makes us contract more, I think.
I agree, and I think that one of the things that I know you and I have found very helpful is the whole point of resisting something that's coming up and being able to embrace it. And certainly it's something that I know we remind each other of at times. And I think we all need to be reminded of it, because especially, as you say, when something comes round for the sort of nth time and you think, oh, not this whole issue again. Haven't I healed this issue with whoever it is yet, or with myself yet? I can't believe that this is still here. You know, my very first therapy session 10 years ago was about this, and here it is again, you know. And it can get so frustrating. And of course, as soon as you think those thoughts, you get tense. Any help or support or inspiration that might have been available to you disappears, because you're in resistance and frustration. And actually, one thing that I find helps me is if I can picture whatever it is that's come up as a child. Because, I mean, it might work for you better if you picture it as a puppy or whatever it is that makes your heart melt. That's something that's vulnerable that you would never want to be cruel to. And just look at it and think, you know, oh, here you are again. You're the lost child or the lost animal that keeps trying to get my attention, because I haven't embraced you enough yet. I haven't integrated you enough yet. Yes, I've looked at you and I've admired every part of you and I've got to know you very well. But the one thing I haven't done, perhaps, is, and that's why you're back again, is I haven't said, I love you. You're part of me. Come in. Come in. Yeah. Come into my heart. Yeah. Be part of me. Because when you do that, it doesn't need to come back anymore because it's already been welcomed into your heart.
Yeah, and it's that the healing power of that level of compassion and that radical acceptance, even when it's something we really don't like and don't want to see, but to find a place in our hearts to really let that in. Yeah, it really is life-transforming stuff, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think those are the moments when I've personally embraced something that I've resisted all my life, and I feel, especially when it's a very easy thing to say, oh, well, I think forgiveness is one of those things. I've often forgiven things with my head and thought I've done it, and then back it comes again, and I realise, okay, I didn't forgive this with my heart, which is a very different experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and at its most basic, I think healing is about, healing equals love. Self-healing is self-loving. Yeah, and it's not something that we tick off in our list. It's an ongoing daily practice to meet ourselves with that amount of love and compassion, and to meet life with that amount of love and compassion, isn't it?
It is, and I think one of the great things is the more you can forgive in yourself and in your own life, the more forgiving you become of others. And the one thing that will absolutely separate you from other people and make you feel like you don't belong and you don't fit in and all those thoughts that you were talking about earlier is judgment. So the less you judge yourself, the more you forgive yourself, the softer you become, the more soft other people experience you as softer as well. And so you'll become more approachable. You're more, love is available to you. And it's a wonderfully in a way a great selfish thing to do, because it improves your life immensely, but it also helps other people because you're modelling that self-forgiveness for other people.
Yeah, and then it's so much nicer to be around someone who you can tell is a very forgiving, compassionate person than someone who's judgmental. And I find when there's people that I know just love and accept me like you, I can bring all of myself to the conversation, and there's no part of me that's in hiding, because there's no part of me that's scared that it'll be shunned, so I can be completely myself. And then there's other people that if I'm around and I just know, like, I'm not going to name names, but I know that they're just on my case and want to judge me, and it's like I can't speak, and everything I say comes out sounding a bit ridiculous because I'm not allowed to flow fully in my authenticity. So the beauty of being in the presence of people who love and accept us is such a big healing thing. And to line ourselves up for more of those opportunities and to feed ourselves with time with people that love us and that we love. And if there's people in your life that are toxic and make you feel just downright shitty, like, know that it's okay to not let them be cruel and nasty and not let them do that to you.
Absolutely. And I think also one of the gifts of being with somebody who, you know, no matter what, is not going, it will just love you anyway, is that you can take risks. You know, for me, that's one of the great gifts of being with the people who I know will love me anyway. You know, my friends who, if you like, are my chosen family. They are people with whom I can try stuff out with. That I, you know, try being this person, this aspect of myself that I felt is completely unacceptable, and I can go there, and they might kind of find this hilarious or a wonderful gift, or they really enjoy being around it, and I think, oh, okay, you know, I shut that bit down, I closed that door when I was four because someone shamed me for it, and now here I am, you know, allowing it forth, and people love it. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's amazing the judgments that we take on when we're young and how much we close down. Mm-hmm. It's very much like, you know, sort of you're going at 40 watt with some people, and then you walk into the room with someone and who just completely wants you to be yourself and accepts you as you are, and you're 100 watt. It's different.
When I've had that experience, I've described it as feeling that my soul can fully inhabit my body, because it's like you can just then be completely, fully yourself. And that's what we're all here to do, isn't it? Is to learn how to completely be here fully, all parts of ourselves, and to shine from that soul essence. Because we are an expression of the divine, and we're here to clear all the blocks and the barriers that get in the way so that we can just shine with that light of who we are.
And I think that, to bring it full circle to ancestral healing, I think that mention of forgiveness, I think that is also another aspect I see a great deal with ancestral healing, is that somewhere in the line something was not forgiven. And when we forgive in our own lives, it kind of doesn't even matter if we don't link it with ancestral healing. That energy of forgiveness simply feeds back up, and the flow can begin. It's a really strong need to forgive. I mean, I think one of the things I've sometimes seen in healing with clients has been, for example, where I remember vividly a family who had, I think there were about four children, and their parents had benefited basically from Nazi gold, and they were from Germany originally, I think, and the children, two of the children married Jews, and one of them married somebody of West African origin, and I think one of them was gay. And it was just such an amazing expression of atonement within a family. And they didn't, obviously, it wasn't a conscious thing, but I could almost have, you know, now after a while of working in this way, I can almost sometimes predict how people are going to play out. For example, if somebody in someone's family has been completely excluded, they may exclude themselves by going, if their family are in the UK, they may go and live in Australia or something like that. They make themselves unavailable. Mm. And once you can integrate that missing ancestor back into the family, they suddenly feel more relaxed and more able to be with their family of origin. And it's again, we're coming back to wholeness.
Yeah. Now, the journey of healing is one about finding integration and wholeness, and finding all those parts within us where the energy isn't flowing, and within our lives where things are getting stuck, and like what you were saying, where the pressure's building up, and bringing our love and attention, whether it's on an individual level, whether it feels it's got some karmic charge to it, whether it feels like it's something from our family that we're carrying. And for all of us, I guess the details will be different, but we just need to have that awareness that there are different realms within which we are working to bring healing, and just to be conscious that that's the movement, that's the journey, because ultimately healing is bringing us back to love, reminding us that we are divine, and reminding us of our light and our beauty.
And actually, something you said earlier today, I think is worth mentioning, that there is often a conflict between what our soul wishes us to express and what we are able or prepared to express. And the more that is in conflict, the more we have problems. And, you know, perhaps that's also expressed by physical tension and also the jaw getting very tense and migraine coming up from that. That the less we express our real selves, the more tension we feel. And actually, what we are trying to express is simply the divine within us. It's not the more we stifle our full expression, the more we're disrespecting, in a way, the source and the divinity that is us. We're all expressions of the divine.
Yeah, and we owe it to ourselves as divine sparks to remember that we are all worthy and beautiful and valuable and necessary, and a kind of out of a sort of respect for ourselves, it's that need to heal any of the parts that are in conflict to that basic truth. Yeah, the healing power of compassion and forgiveness and love and acceptance and spaciousness. A good recipe for life.
Indeed.
Thank you so much, Nikki. So if people want to find out more about your work and the essences that you make, and also the water that healed your migraines, would your website be the best portal for them to get in touch?
Yes, indeed, yeah.
www.spiritoftransformation.com.
Yes.
Nikki Wyatt, karma coach, all sorts of exciting professional things, but also dear heart friend. Thank you very, very much.
You're very, very welcome. And also, if you want to sign up to my newsletter, you'll find that there are often some crossovers with the exciting stuff that Jackie does. So, as she said, we complement each other extremely well.
Thanks for listening, folks. I hope you found something interesting, relevant, useful, inspiring there. And thanks for listening. Okay, bye.